Everyone, this is Pam, and you're listening to a new episode of the podcast Women Who Stutter, Our Stories. You can find that on the blog at stutterrockstar.com and wherever you get your podcast from. Today, as always, I have the pleasure and privilege of meeting another amazing woman who's going to share parts of her story. So I'd like to say hello to Jolie. Hey, Jolie, how are you today?
Hi, Pam. I'm doing very great. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I am doing very well. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, I'm excited, and I'm sure so will our listeners be. So to get us started, could you formally introduce yourself? Tell us who you are, where you're from, and what you do to keep busy.
Yes. Before I share my story, I just want to say thank you so much, Pam, for creating this safe space for us. Thank you so much for creating this podcast for us. And I've been listening for quite some time, and this podcast has really helped me through a lot of dark times. You know, whenever I need the courage, the inspiration to do something, you know, to speak up, I would listen to you and to all of the women you've interviewed, and I am just so proud of you all for speaking up and having the courage to show the world that we have a voice and we have so much value to offer to the world.
My goodness. What a great way to start. Thank you so much.
So hi, everybody. My name is Jolie Keenan. There's a lot of things that keep me busy. I have two young daughters. My eldest is 5 years old and my youngest is almost 20 months now. So I'm busy with them. I'm also a full-time infectious disease doctor practicing here in Washington State. So that keeps me on my toes.
And I bet.
And then recently, my mom and I collaborated and created a business where we created a journal or a planner, like a yearly planner that supported our busy lives and our lives as a professional. So yeah, lots of things to keep me interested.
Yeah. So you're an infectious disease doctor, you said?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
What prompted you to get into healthcare?
I mean, growing up, I wasn't surrounded by doctors. It's not as if my parents were doctors. It just sort of one step after the other, it just kind of led me to where I am now. I grew up in the Philippines. Well, I was born in Los Angeles, California, and then shortly after, my parents went back home to the Philippines, and so I grew up there. So most of my formative years were in the Philippines, and then I had moved over to the U.S. to pursue my college degree. I went to Gonzaga University in Washington State, and I graduated with a double degree in psychology and sociology.
Wow.
Thinking that I was going to be a psychologist. And then, you know, life changed. I said, I don't think I want to be a psychologist. Let me see if I can get into medical school. So I took a year of just taking science courses, because you would need a lot of the courses, you know, to qualify for pre-med. And after that, I decided to go back home to the Philippines to pursue my medical schooling, because I'm very close to my grandparents. And then at that point, they were already aging. And so I was gone for 4 years for college, and I wanted to go back home for medical school. So I did 4 years of that in the Philippines, and then moved back to the U.S. to pursue my residency. So I was in Chicago for my internal medicine residency. And my chief resident during that time was going to pursue her career in infectious disease. And I was very close to her. And so, you know, she influenced me a lot. The mentors that I ended up with were also infectious disease doctors. So there was a lot of, like, I felt like the universe was telling me something. So after my residency, I stayed in Chicago and pursued my infectious disease fellowship at Rush University. And I graduated in 2020, which was the beginning of COVID pandemic.
Yes. Speaking of infectious disease.
Yes.
Wow. Wow. So, you have a lot going on and you're very busy. You know, choosing a career in healthcare, especially being a physician, how did stuttering factor into this?
Oh gosh, it was really hard, right? Because you know, I am surrounded by people who are so eloquent, who are so smart sounding, right? And they're just so fluent, and there was a lot of insecurity going on, especially when it's so stressful when you're presenting to somebody with authority, somebody more senior than you, and everybody's looking at you, and you have this thought process that if I'm not fluent, they might see me as somebody who's not competent, or that I don't know my patient, which is the worst thing because I know them inside and out. I just can't vocalize everything, or some of the medical terms, I can't switch to like a different adjective that will make me more fluent. And so that was really hard. And there were some like really difficult times when I would have a block and they would just look at me as if I had three heads. But you know, that's when I have to just, okay, what do I really want to do? Do I want to pursue this? Do I want to keep on showing how vulnerable I am? And it was hard, but I got through it. I got through it. Especially with infectious disease, every week we would have grand rounds and we would have to present an interesting patient and do a discussion in front of probably 100 people in the room, and they're all senior attendings. Chicago Public Health was there, the CDC was there. It was, oh my God, it was so nerve-wracking. And there are times when I would get the topic of the week maybe a couple days before. And so it's like, how the heck do I prepare for this, right? Because it's one thing knowing the material, but then another thing delivering it in front of hundreds of people. So that was so stressful, but I got through it, you know. And I think people who don't stutter don't know this, but when we have to present something, you bet that we've practiced it like hundreds of times where I've already memorized it. Right? Like you can't just give me a report to present the day before. You can't do that, because I would need probably 1 to 2 weeks to, or even longer, to research and really know it front to back to front, and just spit it out, like just memorize, and just I have to report it from my heart pretty much to deliver it the way I want to. I hope you understand that, but right? Like it's just
I do. Yeah. So did you wind up disclosing to anybody during your educational studies and now as a physician? Do you disclose that you stutter to ease some of your anxiety?
No, I've been thinking about that, but I have not. I just sort of go through it, right? And I just sort of realized that this thought process of connecting my stutter to being deemed as somebody who's incompetent or unintelligent, that's on me. That's my thought process. That's my brain. Nobody has ever come up to me like, "Hey, I think you're stupid because you stutter." Nobody has ever said that to me,
Thank goodness.
right? Nobody, and nobody really kind of brought it up. So after many years of struggling with it and not being able to escape from presentations, I sort of just accepted it and realized that it's all in, like, it's in my head. You know, this part of me that's blocking me from pursuing all of my dreams, from pursuing like the biggest life I want to live is in my head, right? And I just want to share this with everybody too, that I'm part of this self-coaching scholars curriculum by Brooke Castillo, and she has this model where she says that there's a circumstance that has no emotion, right? It's like, I stutter. That's a circumstance. That's a fact. Like, if you ask me if I stutter, I'm gonna say yes, it's a fact. And then there's, after the circumstance, there's a thought to it. Like, what do I think about that? And then that thought process fuels my feelings, and then my feelings fuels my actions, and then my actions fuels my result. So if I'm thinking about my stutter as like a negative thing, the circumstances I stutter, the thought process would be, therefore I am incompetent, therefore I am not a figure of authority. And the feeling that triggers is embarrassment, feeling small, disempowerment, and then the action is, I hide, right? I hide, I don't speak up, I become small, and the result would be I become stagnant. I don't enjoy my life, you know. I don't go out there and pursue my dreams. But what she was teaching us is that you can change your thoughts around it. So by changing the thought about the stutter, and I just think that, okay, the circumstances I stutter, the thought is, so what? So what? A lot of people say, whatever. So what? I stutter, so what? And then the feeling becomes, I am excited, I am empowered, I am determined, because my stutter is not going to hinder me. And then the action is, I show up, I get on podcast with you. Oh my goodness. And then that's the action. And then the result is I feel excited, I feel valuable, and the result is I do provide value to the world. And then, you know, in the end, I don't stutter as much, because I'm not like circling all of these negative thoughts in my head. So it's an incredible model that I live by.
Well, it sounds really incredible, and it sounds like, you've practiced a lot of self-talk so that the negative self-talk becomes positive self-talk. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, but it's not a lot of affirmations. It's just what she teaches is that the world is 50-50. You know, it's 50% good, it's 50% bad. You can't just, you know, throw rainbows and unicorns into things that you just will everything to be good. So yeah, 50-50. Yes, I stutter. So what? That might be like a 50% bad, if I think, you know, but then the 50% good is, it doesn't stop me from talking to people, it doesn't stop me from meeting other people, and it doesn't stop me from developing more skills that actually make me feel more confident, and therefore I stutter less. It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I've read and heard over the years that the more we try not to stutter, the more we stutter, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, it really is, part of our thoughts, you know? I think it was Charles Van Riper, who was like a pioneer in the field, you know, alluded to that trying not to stutter results in stuttering. So, and it sounds like you've, I don't know, like found some freedom, right?
Yes, definitely. I found a lot of freedom. I found a lot of confidence when I just add so what to that circumstance.
But you also use the word you're covert about your stuttering, right?
Yes, meaning I haven't disclosed it except to my husband, you know, when I'm having a bad day and I just, it's just, it comes in spurts, right? It comes in stages in life. There are months where I'm doing very good, and then there are months when I'm not doing very good. There are days when I just like can't get on the phone without stuttering. And then I would just talk to my husband about it, right? And then my husband's like, well, so what? You know, like, you have a beautiful life, so what, right?
Yeah.
So covert, I mean, it's more that when I meet people, I don't say, hi, I'm Julie. By the way, I stutter. So I don't disclose it right away. Like, I'm not wearing a t-shirt that I stutter, you know?
Right.
And then if I do get a block, if I do stumble upon a word, I don't tell them that I stutter. I don't know if I should be doing that, but it doesn't matter to me, you know, because like, to me, it's just part of who I am. I'm, if they ask me about it, then I will tell them that yes, I do stutter, but it's not something that defines me, you know.
Right.
That my fluency is not who I am only.
Right. Well, it sounds like you have a really, really positive attitude, and you sound really comfortable in your communication. So, you know, there would be no need to disclose that you stutter. And I like the fact that you indicated that, you know, if you stutter and it looks like somebody's looking like puzzled or surprised or something, you may say, oh, I just stutter, you know, no big deal. I mean, that's very empowering as well, right?
Yes. And I think it hasn't always been like this, right? Mm. There, like I told you, there are dark ages in one's lives, when you stutter. So it's not always like this. Mm. But I think just having the tenacity to get up and and try again the next day, you know.
Right.
Okay, fine, this presentation didn't really go as well as I had planned. I stuttered all the way through. Well, I still have 100 presentations because I still have, you know, a lot of, because the presentations never end, right?
Right.
So move on, and then I'll do better next time. And then if I don't, move on. I have so many opportunities. And one thing I also want to share is when I am in a negative spiral where I delivered a presentation that just wasn't up to par in my eyes, my brain starts to look for evidence that my stutter is hindering me. That I didn't do that because I stutter. And do you know what? Because do you remember this presentation that you gave and you couldn't even get through this word? Do you remember that time when you couldn't speak to your attending? and when they looked at you funny. And so your brain just starts to search for these instances in your life where you are affirming that thought. And so now I'm practicing now that then I'll just do the opposite. I'll just create memories show up and speak more. And then it's just like a numbers game. Then the more speeches that I deliver, the more presentations that I give, then I will have more evidence that, hey, I can speak fluently. You know, I can deliver a presentation, even if it's not 100% fluent, they understood me. And that's all that mattered. So now I'm creating more positive experiences. So I can kind of build that bank of presentations where I did great. And then, kind of when I'm having a bad day, be like, no, it's just a bad day. Because do you remember that time when you gave that amazing presentation and everybody was so proud of you? Then I can anchor to that experience in my life, right? Because the brain is so powerful. It will search for things, for experiences in your life to support the thought that you're thinking at that moment.
Wow. What a great way to describe that process. And you're right. Like, people who don't stutter have no idea of the complexity that we face in just everyday speaking, you know. So kudos to you for just being out there and stepping outside of your comfort zone and just doing. And I really like the way that you draw on remembering the positive experiences. Like, that becomes muscle memory, right?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. So instead of looking for the events where your stutter got the better of you, then you selectively look for the times when you gave a great presentation, where you spoke with so much emotion, you know what I mean? Like, where you delivered a presentation that was amazing, or when you just, gosh, I ordered exactly what I wanted on the menu, you know?
right. Yeah.
Exactly, you know, the drink that I wanted with all of the fixings and all of the spices that I wanted in it, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever have speech therapy, Jolie?
No, I never went through it. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, growing up in the Philippines, it was sort of, I remember like stuttering as a child. I feel like I've been stuttering since forever, you know. And I just like have these memories of my uncles or my dad just like, just spit it out, just tell, you know. It's kind of like traumatizing, right?
Yes, very.
Where they just think that I have the wrong words for it. I have the perfect word. It's just hard for me to enunciate it right now, but
right.
Yeah. And that's when, so, you know, ignorance is sort of when people associate it with not having the right words for it.
Right. I think a lot of, you know, what you're describing and that, you know, what people who stutter experience, I think some of it comes down to like the words that we use to describe stuttering. You know, I've heard people refer to stuttering as an affliction, or I'm suffering from stuttering, or it's a defect, or it's an impediment, you know? And I think that when we use those words and think of stuttering as an impediment, then it does impede us. But if we just think of stuttering as it's just the way I talk, you know, then we can feel empowered to just be our very best self. And it just sounds like that's what you've been doing, like, for so long, being the best Jolie that you can be, right?
Yes, because for so long, we just felt so, I mean, I felt responsible for people's uncertainty and anxiety about my stuttering. But then you know what? Their feelings are their feelings. I'm not responsible for their emotions. If they're feeling really uncomfortable in my presence because I was stuttering in front of them, that's not my problem, you know? Then
No, you're right.
I'm responsible for my thoughts and I'm responsible for my emotions. Right? Like if they feel uncomfortable looking at me as I bumble through a word, that's on them. But of course it you know, this wasn't overnight, right? Like, I'm 37 years old and I've been stuttering since a child, so it wasn't always like this.
Right. Now, you mentioned that you've had some dark times. Was it because of how you felt about stuttering?
Yes, especially as I sort of climbed through the education ladder, right? Where I did medical school, where you're kind of in a group of like hundreds of people, so you could lay low, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to be the project leader, you don't have to be the one always speaking in front, you could be the assistant, right?
Mm-hmm.
and then as you move up in specialty and then you get into residency, from 100 people now there's only 20 of you. And then you're starting to give more leadership roles, and then in fellowship from 20 people to 5. Right? So now the roster is much, much smaller, and so the rotation of speaking opportunities becomes really more frequent.
Or big, you know, it just becomes bigger.
Bigger, and then you're like, okay, there's only 5 of us, so that means every, you know, like every fifth week I have to give a presentation, as opposed to just being in a group of hundreds of people and then you could kind of hide in the back.
Right.
So as the group became smaller, then that's when it's like, oh gosh, I have to perform equal to my peers, right? Like if he's speaking fluently where he doesn't stutter at all, then I have to do the same, right? And sometimes I mean, you know, I've never really told anybody this, but when we have presentations and my colleague would tell me, oh my gosh, I didn't even work on this, I'm just gonna wing it, like I just read up on this paper yesterday, so I don't know what I'm gonna do. And then in my head, wow, what a luxury. what a luxury that you could just wing it, you know, like you read a paper and then you're just gonna discuss it the day after, whereas this internal turmoil in my head that, oh my god, I didn't practice this, I have to memorize this, I have to make my PowerPoint presentation, I have to make it so simple so that I don't have a block, all of that noise in my head. You know, like an example is my husband is a prosecutor, and so he's always in court, right? So and he's always telling stories, and he would tell me that, oh my gosh, I have to present this, I have to do this motion tomorrow, and I only got the information today. I mean, as a stutterer, I would faint. But then he does it so well, and it's just, you know, the just people who don't have a stutter don't know this about us and our like emotional turmoil and what goes through our heads when we have to show up like that.
Yeah. I have a very, very good friend. He is a neuroradiologist. So he's a brain specialist, you know, And he does the same thing. Like if he has to present at Grand Rounds or he has to do, a case in front of residents, he tells me that he practices for like days and days and days, and just like over prepares because he wants to be perfect in his delivery. And I feel for him, because there was a time when I did that, but I just reached the point where I don't want to be chained to some vision that I have to be fluent because I'm okay just the way I am. But he does the same thing, like over prepares because he feels that as a doctor, he has to. He has to present this image. So I feel for you. Oh, geez, we're having an ice storm here, and I just saw my like power flicker for a second. So we're all good. So, Jolie, do you worry that your children might stutter?
I don't. I mean, if they do end up stuttering like me, I feel that I would be a great role model for them. That again, if they start showing signs that they might stutter, then that's good news, right? Like it's like so again, so what? Like mommy stutters and mommy does whatever she wants.
Exactly. What better parent to parent a kid who stutters than a mom who does and who gets it,
Yes.
and has, worked it into your life beautifully.
Yes. I mean, as somebody who stutters, I do know when I meet somebody who also stutters but doesn't disclose it to me, like some of the residents would present a case to me, and then I know that they're stuttering or they're trying to change a word. I just kind of see it, or I just feel it, right? Or I have some patients who can't really, who stutter also, but they don't disclose it to me, and it's like, I know how you feel. I don't tell them, but I just let them finish. I just wait. I look at them straight in the eye. I don't break eye contact, and I just wait for them to finish. Yeah, it's really amazing how you can tell how somebody is trying to hide their stuttering, and me being on the other end of it and just being comfortable with it. I feel that I get you. I get you. We're not disclosing to each other, but and then after that, I kind of sense a feeling that they're thankful that I let them finish their sentence without me interrupting or finishing it for them.
I like to call that stuttering radar.
Oh, yeah,
Like
that's a good one.
the we who stutter, like we can tell when somebody else is stuttering or word swapping or like we just have that, we're on guard for it, I guess, so is there anything you'd like to share with young women maybe who are just starting out on their journey with stuttering, owning it, or figuring out how to cope with it. What insight might you offer?
Listen to your podcast. Listen to Pam's podcast, because she has gathered all of these women who stutter but are still rocking it, like who are still like showing up and creating so much value for everybody. I mean, you have all women from all walks of life, right? In all professions, different professions, and yeah, I think this was like godsend to me, when when I'm having a hard time.
Well, I am so happy that you came out of the shadows, stopped lurking, and wanted to share your story, which is so inspiring. And I'm just so glad that you reached out. People are going to listen to this and say, "Yeah, Jolie, look at her. I can do it too." And that's what this is about, right?
Yes, definitely. That's why I wanted to share my story is like, just to show your audience that as a person who stutters, we can be successful too.
Absolutely.
We can go for our biggest dreams. We can, yeah, like just we can do whatever we want to do, and we only have one life to live, and so let's not shy away from it because of a stutter again. So what?
Yeah, we only have one life to live. I love that. What a great way to wind down this very inspiring conversation. Jolie, thank you so much for being a guest today. It was an honor getting to know you.
Thank you so much, Pam, and I'm so happy to be on, and this was really a safe space. I feel safe talking to you. So again, thank you for creating this incredible safe space for us.
And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.
No, 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 no.